What is up, Level Up Nation, and welcome to episode 140 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined once again for the 140th time. Yes, he is still not fed up with me yet. It is the king of the courtside, Joey. What's up, buddy?
What is up, John? I just realized I did not change that on the top of the notes here. I'm still one episode back, according to the notes.
Yeah, it's okay. Right before we went live, I realized there's like three other spots on our notes where I still had 139 put down. And I'm not as bad as Will Ferrell's character on Anchorman, where, you know, I read verbatim like it's going to screw me up or anything like that. But I'd probably say it once or twice. And
oh, you definitely would. It would get you like in the closing or in the intro at least.
Oh, especially the closing. Like the closing is such a flow now, and it's just anywho. Nation, make sure you're following the show on social media. That's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's at the Level Up Podcast, at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter, give Joey and myself a follow. That's at Courtside King and at Fiasco. If you're watching here live on Twitch, welcome as always. You can find those handles below those horrific mugshots you're staring at right now live on Twitch. And if you're listening to the podcast later on down the road on your podcatcher of choice, they're going to be in the show notes. So feel free to copy and paste that into Twitter, and you can find us there. And Nation, while you're at it, leave us a review on your podcatcher of choice. Level Podcast is now again available on Spotify and Stitcher, as well as iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. Reviews go a long way to really help the show out, and we do appreciate it if you take a small moment of your day and leave us an awesome review or a not-so-awesome review. Give us some critical feedback. We're open to all kinds of feedback. But leave us a review. It helps make the show better and helps get the show out to more people, and we can expand that Level Up Nation.
And just to hop in there, guys, so the reason we're on Stitcher and Spotify now is because people requested it. If there's another podcatcher out there that we are still missing, feel free to request it as well.
Boy, Spotify had us jumping through hoops like crazy, but we're on there. We're on there, Spotify, and you can't get rid of us now. Nation, the LCS has crowned a winner for the summer split and is now looking for their final team to represent North America in Worlds 2019 as they head into the regional gauntlet. Oh, and what's this, Joey? I was just scrolling through the notes here real quick. 2 weeks in a row, we have positive news about Sony. I don't know about you, Joey, but I feel like this might be the end of the world. Before the world ends, what else are we going to talk about on episode 140?
Oh, great question, John. Some major roster moves, especially in CSGO currently, with recent majors ending there. We have a new Alienware Center opening in Berlin with Misfits. On top of that, we just had Gamescom this past week, so a lot of big gaming and tech news as well.
All right, we have our topics. We have a second week of positive Sony news. I am really struggling to understand how we managed to get this on the show. Joey, I'm going to need a little assistance to kind of curb my excitement about this whole Sony bit 2 weeks in a row. So it is time for that drink of choice. It is time for that time-honored tradition. So, Joey, I need to know for the 140th time, what's your beverage?
It's not without a little bit of nervousness, but it is the return of the milk sugar, John.
Oh, no.
Screech is back. Aslan Brewery here in Virginia. Screech, it is a triple Indian pale ale with milk sugar, which we're still kind of figuring out what that is, but it had some interesting side effects last time.
Yeah, Joey pretty much had a frog in his throat for most of the episode last time he had this, so this is going to be absolutely interesting. Joey, it is also a return of a beverage here I've had on the show before. It's one I introduced you to not too long ago. It is the Cloud Beer from Seoul, South Korea. Probably one of my favorite Korean beers out there right now. And Joey, I'm actually going to be classy. I'm not going to drink from the bottle this episode, but instead I've poured it into my Black Panther cup.
Ooh.
So I have my Black Panther cup, and I'll be drinking a beautiful Cloud Beer out of that for this episode. Joey, we have our topics. We have our beverages. I don't want to waste any more time. The world is ending. Let's get right into gaming and esports news. Let's go.
Yes, sir. After falling short of the Berlin Major, Fnatic lost the moniker as the only team to have attended every single CSGO major up until that point. As a result, roster changes are incoming. FNC has announced initial changes to their lineup by moving their in-game leader Exist to the bench, as well as Twist. On top of that, they are searching for two new players, and they have not found those players yet. My question to you, John, so your lineup here, you have, it's now two veterans, that have previously been on Fnatic and have won championships with them, as well as one really well up-and-coming Swedish rookie. What do you do to round out the rest of this team? So you could use one of your veterans as an in-game leader, but they're not traditionally in-game leaders. You could look for young talent here. What are you thinking if you're Fnatic filling out these last two positions?
I would be looking for young talent. You know, they may be raw. They may be unproven. Personally, I would look for that next diamond in the rough, if you will, that needle in the haystack. The person that, you know, has been making some noise but isn't quite yet on the radar, and hopefully putting him into a situation with that veteran leadership, kind of guiding him and helping him learn, or him or her, guiding them along the way in the professional CSGO scene on this incredibly high level with a world like class organization like Fnatic. So that's what I would be looking for. You know, maybe that's a reason I'm not in team esports like that. But personally, I would go younger. I would try to find that young diamond in the rough player, bring them to the organization, have them learn under that veteran leadership. Because at the end of the day, if you stack your roster with vets that are kind of struggling maybe towards the end of their career, you're not going to grow as an organization. Sometimes you have to go younger. You have to bring in that young talent and have the one or two older veterans on the team kind of guide them and mold them for them to eventually take over that team and hopefully lead that organization to championships in the future.
I feel similarly. I think I would go one youth player, and the other one I'd be open to youth or an older player or a veteran player in this sense. The big reason being the in-game leader. I feel like rookies have potential. We saw it with Golden for a while. He played for Fnatic, then he played for Cloud9. He did a good job. They won a few events here and there, but he never really made it all the way. Part of that could be Golden in and of himself. Part of that just because he's so young. When you have a young leader like that, they haven't been in some of these situations that veterans have. So unless you make JW your in-game leader, I think it's almost better to go with a veteran. Personally, I would love Cold Zera to move over, but that boy costs a lot of money. So with that being said, if they can find a good veteran that has shown they have a great track record for in-game leadership and clutch situations, then I say go for it. Otherwise, I think you do look a route of a second rookie and maybe making JW the in-game leader. So exciting stuff there. Do you think Fnatic makes their way back up by the next CS major, or do you think it takes a little while for them to kind of gel, especially with at least one young talent most likely coming in?
I think if they have one young talent, if he's able to adapt quickly, I think you can see Fnatic back up in the upper echelon. If they go with two younger talents for that team, then I do see it taking a little bit longer to try to mesh as a team, because again, going young is great to rebuild your organization, but sometimes you can miss when you sign some younger players. So there is a lot of risk there. So hopefully two young players, I think maybe a major or two. You do one young player and another experienced player, then definitely within a major, I would expect to see Fnatic back there.
I'm going to give them three majors. I think it's going to take about three majors. Part of it is because we don't know who these other two players are yet, so they're still doing tryouts. They're still figuring out who they're going to be. I think by the time the first major rolls around for that roster, they're going to have a little bit of growing pains. They might have some communication errors in game. I think in the second major, you start seeing them work through that. Maybe they make the elimination rounds. By the third major, I think they're a contender again.
So I just have really high expectations.
You do, higher than me as a Fnatic fan. So maybe I'm being too critical, but I'm hoping by the third major, we start to see some good success.
Look, just because our organizations that we support have an amazing online relationship right now between Cloud9 and Fnatic doesn't mean I cannot hold my esport fandom relationship person to higher. I'm not sure how that's going to work. But yes, I believe in Fnatic. I believe they can bounce back.
Now, with that being said, if Cloud9 loans Sneaky to Fnatic CSGO to take with them and he does some cosplaying in front of the opponent's area, maybe I give him two majors in that case.
You know, I'm not even going to comment on that. Sneaky returned with his cosplay, and he does such an amazing job, and it's scary sometimes. It really is.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Speaking of scary, we'll have to see how this new GM does as Florida Call of Duty's I don't even know how to pronounce this yet. They don't have a team name. So the Call of Duty franchise that is going to Florida. Not the only Call of Duty team in Florida, but the official one going to be in this Call of Duty league. They now have their GM. It's going to be Tom Ryan, Ogre 2, many of you know him as. I want to say he was actually a Halo 3 pro back in the day. Do you know that?
I do not know off the top of my head. I will actually Google that.
Please Google that. I think he was a Halo 3 pro, and I want to say he played with Neighbor on... a really famous team that I can't think of. It wasn't Straight Ripping, but it was another one.
Let's see here.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, he has a very long eSportpedia page. Let's put it to you that way.
I think it's Halo 3.
Born in 1986.
Wait, really? Here.
Yeah. Halo 2003, 2004, he was on Domination. Halo 2, he was on STK and Team 3D. Halo 3, let's see here.
So he did play Halo 3.
Final Boss.
Okay, Final Boss might be the team
I'm thinking
of. He was
on Halo Reach. He did Halo 4, and then his first retirement. Then he came out of retirement for Halo 2 Anniversary and played with CLG. And Halo 5 was his second retirement.
Oh, here we go. I found what I'm looking for. So it was Halo 3 with Final Boss, but then the team that I was originally thinking of was Instinct.
Instinct, okay.
Instinct was a really, really well-known team that he played for. Sweet. I did not know I was right on that. I did not fact check myself before, but that is why Fiasco's here, to follow up that knowledge that I'm hopefully correct on.
the live and in-studio fact checker.
Heyo. But we got it right. Ogre 1, Ogre 2, we are working our way through here. Now he's moved all the way from the Halo Pro scene to be in the Call of Duty scene, a little bit different than Halo in quite a few different ways. But the GM, John, that's a great position, and I feel like someone who has such a rich competitive background, as well as some age under his belt and some veteranism, if that's even a word, is going to work really well transitioning into a GM role in Call of Duty.
Making up words as we go along. Veteranism. The attack of the milk sugar is coming back.
Let's see if veteranism's a word while I'm here. It's in Urban Dictionary, so we're going to count it for tonight.
Oh, let's.
Partnerships. Misfits founder and CEO Ben Spunt. He has announced their new Alienware Center in Berlin. So I don't think this is a completely new announcement. I think we knew that Misfits was working on a facility in Berlin. I believe that was public knowledge. At this point, we do know it's with Alienware, and we know more details on the facility based on what Ben came out and said at Gamescom. I think this is great, John. We've already seen Alienware build at least one amazing training facility for Team Liquid out in LA, now going here and building a great one in Europe as well.
Yeah, and you really have to go off of what we've seen from that LA space for Team Liquid there for the Alienware Center out there. And if it's any, even if it's 50% of what we see out in Santa Monica, where the Team Liquid Alienware Center is, it's going to be phenomenal. It's world class. It's state of the art. It's absolutely insane. Spoken with several people who have been to the facility. It is absolutely mind blowing how much technology and infrastructure and just money that was put into those facilities. Alienware is obviously way up there when it comes to pre-made gaming PCs. They're a trusted name. They use trusted products, and their reach into esports is almost there from the get-go. So it's great to see this, and I think a lot of esport organizations in Europe are about to be shown the benefits of having something like an Alienware training facility for an organization to train at.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at high-class PCs, Alienware is obviously one of the top line. No matter who you ask, even if they don't know much about PCs, I feel like Alienware is so well-known in the gaming industry at the very least. So I think this is a great move. Alienware making waves not only in computer parts, but as well in the esports industry too. Ninja and Adidas have partnered up to create a ninja-themed merch line. John, there's really no pictures of anything yet, but I did just subscribe to stay tuned for updates. So Level Up Nation, I will be getting an email at some point with some of this merchandise to talk about. But this looks good from what we've seen in the teaser video. It's a ninja shirt, some ninja really apparel just in general. I'm sure there's going to be some really sick shoes that come out with this deal as well. I'm honestly kind of stunned he hasn't signed with anyone yet up until this point.
Yeah, and before, as we talked about it on the show, he had like really random sponsorship deals. I remember, geez, it might have been like 30 episodes ago, which is, seems like a long time, but we were kind of making fun of it. But he had an underwear deal, and he had like random shirts and you know, some of the stuff like you see popular streamers have. They have their own merch store and everything. Right. But now teaming up with Adidas, I mean, we see Puma, we see Adidas, we see Champion sponsor leagues, sponsor organizations. But really, we're not seeing those like individual athlete sponsorships, kind of like we do see in traditional sports where you have like, you know, Messi is Nike or Michael Jordan was Nike. And then now he's also Jumpman. You know, you don't really see those game those gamer specific sponsorships like that. Now we're seeing that. Now we're seeing Adidas, who's kind of been dabbling in esports just a little bit, is really making a huge jump now with Ninja, and this is going to be massive for him. I mean, Joey, for our listeners not in the Virginia, D.C., Maryland area, schools just went back to school. I believe this week was their first week. Mm-hmm. And on Monday, on my commute into work, I cannot tell you how many kids I saw with Fortnite backpacks, with Ninja t-shirts on. This is going to be absolutely massive for Ninja, and it's going to be absolutely massive for Adidas. Just the power of Fortnite not dying anytime soon. You team that up with a brand that's been around for what feels like forever in Adidas, and you team it up with a popular personality like Ninja. This has a recipe for success. And Joey, I too signed up for that newsletter, and I got my 15% off coupon in the email inbox.
Look at that. Yeah, I don't know if I did the 15% off. I have not checked my email since recording, sir.
Oh, come on.
I know. What was I thinking? But this is great. I mean, like you said, I think it's going to be a very, very big deal with Ninja moving over. We already saw it with Mixer. He's accumulated, I don't even know what his follower account. I think last I checked, it was over 1 million. Over on Mixer, it's going to be the same thing here with Adidas. He's going to pull in so many more people that might normally shop at Nike, that might normally shop with Jordans. It's just, it's such a huge personality moving over to another brand that's going to end up pulling people in. Not only that, but Adidas, I feel like, is most well known for their soccer stuff. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah.
Like running soccer, and soccer, I feel like.
Yeah, running and soccer, and also just that their classic shell-toe shoe is ageless. It spans almost every generation. You have a classic shell-toe shoe, and you slap a Ninja logo on the side of it with those iconic three stripes or on the back heel, and those things are going to be selling like hotcakes. It's absolutely insane just the power that could be potentially unleashed here.
Oh, yeah, you could style it so many ways. Like, you could even use the headband in some way to make the stripes. Like, endless creativity could be done here. But the other big thing, I think, for me is the comparison with soccer. Soccer is such a global sport. And I feel like when you look at esports, Fortnite has grown almost globally at this point. It's starting to make its way into Asia more and more, and it's starting to become more of a household name. It's not League of Legends. It's not Overwatch. But at the same point, Fortnite has really grown in many different regions throughout the world. This, to me, is another move capitalizing on that. You're tapping into that soccer market a bit. You're tapping into that sporty market that's not just the U.S., but also throughout the rest of the world, in Europe, in Asia. So to me, that's another big, big push here. So you're pulling in a lot of gamers, but you're also expanding the brand worldwide by pulling in those gamers that are throughout the world.
I was just hoping we're going to see some teasers on what kind of merchandise they're probably hinting at. But I guarantee it's going to be shirts, hoodies,
hoodie confirmed.
Shorts,
that's
socks.
In the video.
Well, yeah, I mean, hoodie is definitely confirmed. I mean, hoodies are still like the number one seller of anything. In fact, because it is starting to get a little cool outside, I broke out all my hoodies again. Ooh. And realized how many hoodies I actually have. I need more. You can never have too many hoodies, period. And you can't argue with that. So hoodie, shirt. I wouldn't be surprised to see some kind of like jersey version, whether it's like a basketball style jersey. Adidas is even involved in baseball, so I wouldn't be surprised to see like a Ninja baseball jersey. I think that would actually be really cool, having like the Ninja logo going across the chest, almost in a baseball fashion. A lot of really cool things here that can happen with this team up, and I can't wait to see what they come up with.
Yeah, I think hoodies, I think dry fit style shirts is going to be popular. Basketball style shorts, I think you're going to see a lot of, maybe even those soccer shorts that are a little bit shorter. Socks, why not throw a Ninja logo on some socks and some shoes too? So I think there's going to be a whole line coming out for this, and I think it'll be multiple lines as well. We'll get a nice little launch line with his normal logo, his blue, like royal blue coloring. But then from there, I think they go a little crazier and they bring us some new colors. They bring us some new styled logos and different things like that as well. So I'm excited to see how this matures. I think great signing for Adidas here. And of course, Ninja, he's definitely getting paid for this. Sony has opened or is open to PC versions of PlayStation exclusives. Okay, this doesn't strike me as that new, to be honest. Like, I feel like there are some things that are exclusive to PlayStation, but I feel like some of them have been timed exclusives. Like, I think of like Nier Automata. That's on PC as well as a port, I believe.
Yeah, but what about some of the other really exclusive titles? Like, what if you could get MLB The Show on PC? I know that's one sports game that a lot of sport gamers are dying for if they're not on the PlayStation ecosystem, is a baseball game. What if that was released to PC? What about, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure the entire God of War series, is that still Sony exclusive? Or?
It's definitely Sony exclusive. I think it's PlayStation exclusive as well.
Now, what if that was available on a platform like PC, which I think God of War on PC would be absolutely freaking amazing. Just the power that would be able to be put into that game from a PC standpoint that a console can't really do. That would be huge. That would be absolutely massive if something like a God of War was available on PC. So, you know, yeah, it may not sound all that exciting, but we have to also remember, and Joe, we've talked about it, if there's one thing Sony has done right in the last decade of the console wars, it's definitely the exclusive titles. And if those were available on PC, that would be massive to a lot of gamers.
Okay. This is a double-edged sword for me. I think Sony is doing this to match up with Microsoft doing this, but Microsoft has such a stronger infrastructure on PC that I think it makes a bit more sense for them. Not to mention, if PlayStation puts their stuff on PC, what is going to sell their consoles? Like, currently, the thing selling their consoles is the exclusives. The controller is arguably better on Xbox. You can ask the U.S. military. They use Xbox controllers over Sony controllers. Maybe that's because they're Japanese made. I mean, there's just so many different things that are currently in favor of Microsoft outside of those exclusive titles. Sony kills it with exclusive titles. I think if you move that to PC, or if you move the majority of those to PC, you get rid of one of your biggest selling units for that particular console.
Yeah, and I think chat brings up another great point. It's actually Tina from Washington Justice Vice and Virtue Fan Club. There you go. Tina brings up a great point here. Price. The price of a console is incredibly less than that of building a gaming PC that can, you know, a God of War is going to require one of the latest graphics cards because it's going to be so graphic intense. Graphics cards right now by itself go for almost maybe $50, $100 more for a mid-tier graphics card, you know, for that component itself. Then you got the case, the power unit, the processor, the motherboard, the RAM, everything else that goes into it. I mean, Joey, you know, both of our computers are well north of $900 each in total cost here. So, you know, that may be where Sony's saying, hey, look, you know, is it going to hurt us in the long run? Probably not, because the high-end gaming PC is kind of the upper echelon of gaming. Not a lot of gamers are there. You know, while the gaming population, you know, the ones that are spending a lot of money are, you know, mid-20s, early 30s still, and they're having that kind of income, a good population of gamers is still that under 18 age range. And I don't know too many parents that are going out and dropping $1,200, $1,300, $1,400 on gaming PCs.
So I'm curious, though, as consoles continue to rise in price. So you're looking at this next generation. A lot of people are saying $500 to $700 for the next gen. Then if you look at another console gen after that, we're getting closer to $900. I mean, at some point, I think they're going to touch. I think at some point, low-end PCs that can run good games are going to be around the same price as consoles, if we don't even see consoles die out completely and just become copies that you can play on your TV like a stream box.
Well, the other thing to think of, too, is both Microsoft and Sony, about 2-3 years after the initial release, have always come out with a slimmer version, after it's been out, they realize some errors that they may have made, or they may expand on that technology to see how they can fit something into a smaller box and make it a little bit less expensive for the consumer. They always come out with another version that is still just as powerful, but maybe instead of 5 terabytes of hard drive on it, it's only 1 terabyte with an option to expand later. Or, you know, instead of 1 terabyte, maybe it's only 500 gigs for storage. You know, they find ways to offer it at a lower price. And I mean, I remember when the PlayStation 3 came out and I saw the price tag of like almost, I think it was like $600 or $700. I'm like, I'm not paying that. You know, I think it's way too expensive, and they're trying to sell it off as like a entertainment center, which I get, it makes sense. It played Blu-ray, something the Xbox didn't do, but it was really hard to justify that. Then a couple years later, the price dropped and they released a slimmer version, had all the same hardware, but was made slightly different. That was then they were able to drop the price by almost $250. Same thing with Xbox. So while it may deter people to buy the new generation at the get-go, generations span 8, 9, 10 years now for these gaming consoles. So you're going to see 2-3 versions of the cheaper, you know, only in price, I'm not talking in quality, but cheaper versions of these consoles coming out.
Right. Yeah, I feel like the average is about 7 years now, so it is definitely quite a while. And at least with Xbox, we've seen 3 different releases, I believe, during the time period. So it's definitely a possibility that we see differences in that area. One of the other things, I think Xbox has announced it, they're looking at doing an all-digital console as well. So you get rid of the disc slot, it makes it cheaper as well. So different little changes like that, like you said, memory changes, technology increases and improves over time so they can cut chips back or change chips out for cheaper chips or more efficient chips to make it smaller. So yeah, I mean, you have a great point there as well. A lot of good stuff. So I'm curious to see if PlayStation does go that route, if they do put PC games out there. If anything, I would play it off of, what is it called, PlayStation Now? Is that their streaming service?
I believe so, yeah.
So I think that's the way to do it. I think that's what's really helped Microsoft do it. Not only do they own Windows, but they also have the ability with Xbox Game Pass now on PC too to really make it much more fluid in that sense and the improvements to the Windows Store, which still needs plenty of improvements if I say so myself. But at the same time, I think if Sony works through that PlayStation Now service, that'll help with the streaming later down the road as well as a transition to offering more of their exclusive games on PC. WoW Classic has been released. John, you and I have dabbled with World of Warcraft here and there. I, much less than you, I believe I only played for like 2.5 months or so. Then I just got a little bit bored. It got a little too grindy for me, but you know a lot more depth of the lore. And you were one of those, I don't know if you played WoW back in the vanilla days, but I know you do have a little bit more depth in that area of WoW. Are you going to be downloading WoW Classic?
No. I'm going to tell you why. So I came in the golden era of WoW. I joined during Wrath of the Lich King, where the big population spike of World of Warcraft really did occur. I'm not going to be playing vanilla. I've talked with a lot of former guildmates that played vanilla. There were no mounts. There were mounts, but you had to get to like level 50. It was something absolutely absurd. Like, I believe 60 was the level cap back in vanilla. So these servers are going back to that legit vanilla state. The lore is capped at what vanilla WoW was. So like if you're a Blood Elf fan and you really want to play a Blood Elf in vanilla, it's not going to happen because Blood Elves came out in that first expansion. They weren't in vanilla. So there are a lot of things that they're going to go back to. So I want to applaud Blizzard for actually going back to vanilla, making vanilla servers. I think that's absolutely fantastic. The entire community. I know a lot of people are diehard vanilla WoW players, and there's a lot of hype around it. So I think it's great that they're going to be bringing back those servers. The response has been absolutely incredible if you disregard the queue times to get in, but that goes to show you how popular the idea of vanilla WoW is. And I also feel like that has to do with some of the dissatisfaction players have with some of the recent expansions that came out and how upsetting they were in terms of the amount of content you got per expansion and just how everything just seems to be recycled and nothing new has really come out. So turning the clock back a little bit, giving those players that have been playing for 12 years now that taste of vanilla again, I think that's going to save the fan base. And I think that's going to bring some players back. So I think at the end of the day, it was a smart decision. But no, I will not be going back to vanilla. I'm going to try to stay away from WoW because it's very, very, very addictive. And I don't want to go down that road again.
So as a more recent WoW player, what did I play last June to August range, something around there of 2018, thinking about the idea of no mounts, whether it be ground or flying, that gives me shivers down my spine. I feel like the game was so slow before that.
Yeah. I feel like, I'll double check myself here. Flying mounts were not introduced, I don't think until Wrath of the Lich King. So even with the first expansion, and I'm blanking on the name, was it Burning Crusades? I think it was Burning Crusades. With the first expansion, I don't believe flying was a significant thing yet.
Did they have mounts, the griffins yes. at least, like the traveling by griffin thing?
Yes, but you still have to remember you have to unlock that flight path. So no matter what, you have to make that journey to unlock that flight path before you can do it. So, like, Joey, I don't know if you have seen what, I'm blanking on. So right outside of Ogamar, there's a very large zone that if you're a Horde player, you are stuck leveling in. And Cataclysm was split into two, but it's a massive, massive zone I need to look that up here real quick. But when it was split in two, it made it a little bit easier because they essentially made it into two zones. But it is absolutely mad. It would take literally hours to go from the very north to the very south of this zone. And this had you going all over the zone. It this is going to bother me. I need to look this up here. Hold on.
Any big WoW players in chat tonight that can help him out?
Well, Squirtle was talking about...
he lasted a week, though, it sounds like.
Yeah, on Vanilla, which, you know, I'm not going to lie. I don't think I would have lasted a week on Vanilla myself. Let me see here. Maps, help me out here. Come on, where is this? Someone play some Jeopardy music. This is getting
Lost
bad.
In Azeroth.
Not quite lost in Azeroth just yet. I know it's in Kalimdor.
I don't remember what the map looks like that well.
Because it got split in Cataclysm to northern and southern barons by the Cataclysm itself. There you go. Barons. When that thing was together, it was awful. I remember it pre-Cataclysm back in Wrath. And it was a nightmare. It had you going all over the place. A simple, go kill five whatever and bring their heads back. You know, you're like, okay, that's going to be simple. I can grind this out before I have to go to bed. I can grind this out before I have to do homework. I can grind this out before I have to, you know, eat or whatever. Wrong. Because it was 45 minutes down. And, oh, yeah, by the way, they're a rare spawn. So one pops up every 5, 10, 15 minutes. Ooh. And there's 18 other people there waiting. And if you don't get the first hit, you're not going to get credit for it. So when you finally do get five after an hour of waiting around, finally getting five, now you have to go 45 minutes back to turn the quest in to the northern part of the map. It took forever. And Joey, again, no mounts. This was a beginning zone. This was literally hard leveling from between 10 and level 30, I believe. So for 20 levels, you were stuck in this massive blah that was Barrens, and they finally broke it up in Cataclysm. Probably one of the only good things that happened in Cataclysm was them breaking up those areas. To me, Vanilla having to do all of that again, look, I'm spoiled. I have no problem admitting that. A lot of hardcore Vanilla players think that people that came in during Wrath and after are spoiled. Yeah, okay, fine, that's great, we're spoiled, but that's what attracted us to the game, was the fact that I didn't have to walk around for 3 hours to unlock a flight path that I now have to pay 10 silver every time I want to use it. And oh yeah, by the way, that quest I just completed was only good for 2 silver and 87 copper. It's, to me, cost-benefit analysis here. Doesn't work out. I'm not paying that. I'm going to be walking my butt.
Wow, you are very lively about this for not having re-downloaded this thing.
I love World of Warcraft. I love the lore. I'm very passionate, and it's so hard not to re-download this game. It is so hard not to do it.
Tune in next week to see if John is downloaded. Wow.
I'm going to be locked away in a straitjacket and be like, I need to play WoW.
Oh, my gosh.
It's going
to
be
well,
so
Well, I'm
bad.
About to wow you with some more Halo trivia this week.
Oh, God.
Hey-o. So, Halo, we know they ported over game modes last week to the Master Chief Collection that will be launching on PC later this fall. Well, John, they have also done maps in addition to those game modes they did last week. So, trivia time. How many user-generated maps in Halo 3, Halo Reach, and Halo 4 have been successfully copied over to Future Access and Master Chief Collection? I need your answer to the nearest 100,000. And wait, this is not every single map in those games that was custom made. This is the maps that people put in their tray to be copied over for Master Chief Collection. So
I
users
feel like
had
you
to
asked
put
me
them
this
in
last
the
week.
No, you got asked game modes last week.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I completely dismissed your question because I thought you were just re-asking me again. How many maps were brought over?
And again, it's not every single map, just the maps that users put in their trays to be converted
okay.
over.
Okay. So last week the answer was like what, 2.6 million?
It was a lot. It was something
yeah.
high.
I hope Squirtle did not just give me the answer in chat.
No, chat, please participate as well.
Okay.
Best of luck.
Let me see. I'm going to go with... There are a lot of maps created. 3.78 million.
Hey, that's pretty close. Just add another 3 million onto that. 6.6 million.
I came in half each time. That's incredible.
Yeah, 6.6 million maps moved over that were in people's trays to be moved over to the Master Chief Collection. So I'm stoked. I love some of the maps that were created in Halo 3, Halo Reach. I mean, I spent I probably spent more time playing custom maps than I even did normal multiplayer in that game, because there were so many really cool maps that people came up with, whether it be for racing, whether it be paintball style. Like, I freaking love Halo. I cannot wait for this to come on PC and link with console. But yeah, 6.6 million. That's a lot of maps. And sticking with Microsoft a little bit, we have Bleeding Edge news. The Bleeding Edge Tech Alpha will be arriving on PC this autumn. We don't have a date yet, but the Tech Alpha will be coming to PC as well as Xbox. I'm kind of excited for this, Sean. I don't really know what to expect from Bleeding Edge. Ninja Theory, the studio behind it, is usually known for their single-player games. Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice was their biggest release as of recent. On top of that, Bleeding Edge has that Overwatch feel, but it also kind of has like a MOBA, really like top-down approach look to it. So I'm not really 100% sure what to expect from this. A lot of people are saying it has esport potential, but it is a bit more gritty than something else like an Overwatch.
Everything has esport potential, even if the developer doesn't care about it. that wasn't a shot at Epic. What am I talking about? Yeah, I mean, there is some possibilities here. It's a game that we're both watching. It's a brawler. But it does have that MOBA feel to it. It does have kind of like that structured Overwatch feel to it also. So, I mean, it's there's a lot to unpack here with not a lot of information. So it's exciting, but I'll take a look.
Yeah, I hope we both get in the alpha. I kind of want to talk about it on the show. Well, whatever we're allowed to, that's not signed under NDAs. It's interesting. Like I said, the studio is known for single-player games. They're not super well-known for multiplayer. This was more a passion project of Ninja Theory that started before Microsoft acquired them. So I'm curious to see what edges they brought in from Overwatch, from like a League of Legends, how that all meshes together. It sounds kind of like Smite to me a little bit. Like if you're mixing MOBA with a top-down view and then you're also making it single-player view or whatever Smite does, it sounds like it's very much that Smite camera angle. Smite never really made it big as an eSport, so I'm curious to see if this does go that eSport route, can it outdo Smite in that same sense?
But the real question is, will it outdo Farming Simulator?
That it will. Most games will, in fact. I think Splatoon still has a chance at outdoing that one, in my opinion, but we'll have to wait and see. It is popular in Europe, apparently. They held the championship at Gamescom.
We give Fortnite a hard time with esports and everything. And it's one of those things where it's like even the developer just doesn't care, but Fortnite esports still takes off. Farming Simulator has so much backing behind it. It's literally disgusting. I just don't understand the appeal of it, but it's massive in Europe. And I'm not going to go on another Farming Simulator rant. I'm not going to do it, but I just do not understand. If Farming Simulator can be an eSport, anything can be an eSport. I am almost 100% positive of that.
Yeah, I mean, Farming Simulator has plowed its way into the eSports industry. It's kind of amazing to look back on.
It's plowing. Joey,
Gears 5 is set to launch next week. I am stoked for this one. I've always enjoyed the Gears of War campaign. I've never really gotten into Versus too much, but I love me some Horde mode on the side. They did come out with a new campaign trailer and a new Horde mode trailer, explaining what the new Horde mode is like at Gamescom this past week. It looks really good to me. I'm curious your thoughts, Sean. So previously in Horde mode, they had these characters that anyone could use any gun. They had fortifications where you could kind of build your own base. Now they're adding hero abilities into Horde as well. So if you want to play as a certain character, that character is going to have certain abilities linked to them, including an ultimate ability. So it kind of takes that Overwatch tinge to it a bit. Do you feel like that? I don't know if you've ever played Horde, but do you feel like that works in an endless wave type of simulator?
It could. Why not add another strategic element to Horde where you can build your team based upon abilities versus having a bunch of, you know, smash and mash kind of thing, like, oh, it depends upon what guns you get, how much, you know, what kind of currency you earn and what kind of guns you can buy. That really dictates how well you do. Why not have characters with truly unique abilities and be able to try to build a team and see what does and doesn't work in a Horde mode? I think that is a unique idea. I think that is slightly different, something we haven't really seen. You know, you do have different characters in some modes that, you know, one may be a little bit more I really don't see that. I can't think of a game that actually has that ability to select your character in Horde mode that has unique abilities per character. Generally, it's just a random character assigned to you with a base amount of currency, and then based upon how well you do equals how many special weapons you get. So, yeah, this is actually, come to think of it, running through all the different kind of Horde-type games, it would be a first of its kind. And that actually, having a revelation right here on the show, is actually really intriguing, and I kind of want to experience that now. I'm not a big Gears fan, but that alone has piqued my curiosity, Joey. There you go. Look at that. I might actually get this game now.
Xbox Game Pass, best deal in gaming, $1 a month right now, friends. ad not included. We are
hashtag
not paying for that ad.
Hashtag sponsored. Hashtag. I wish we were sponsored by Microsoft. Joey, we need to get on that, please.
Yeah, maybe one day. Maybe one day. But yeah, I'm excited for it as well. It had some negative feedback up front. People are like, well, I want to play as this character only, but I want this ability. Well, sorry, folks. This is the way it's going. And people, after seeing the trailer, after hearing more from the developers, I feel like are really starting to warm up to this new idea, because it kind of gives the characters more of an identity as well. So not only do you have like the lore behind them and why this character talks the way this way or the way they do because of voice lines and why they act a certain way or why they might limp, but now you're throwing in ultimate abilities. You're defining that character even more. And it almost makes the depth of the, I guess we'll call it the Gearsverse, a little bit more deep as well, because you're taking that lore and adding abilities on with it. So I'm really excited for the change. I think it's going to be really good overall. And this game is packed full of new game modes. Escape, they have a map builder. And John, I know you love using your creativity for stuff like map building and graphic stuff. So I'm excited to see what you can build in that map builder as well. And they have an updated release date. It was supposed to be coming out September 10th for everyone, and then it became September 6th for Ultimate Owners or Game Pass Ultimate Owners. They'll be getting the game through Game Pass. On top of that, they have jumped that up a little earlier, so now you can play on September 5th starting at 9 p.m. Eastern time. You guys can do the calculations for all the other time zones, but 9 p.m. Eastern is when we will be playing it here in D.C. Call of Duty Global League player contract and salary details. Each roster must have at least 7 players with up to 10 total. There can be mid-series substitutions, John, so I think that is one reason that we could see some bigger rosters carried now that they are allowing series substitutions right in the middle of the series. So if Fiasco plays extremely bad in map 2, now you can sub Courtside King in, maybe get a bump, maybe do even worse, you never know. But now that option is going to be out there for franchises. I think that's a really good move in the Call of Duty scene. Each player must be contracted with a guaranteed salary of at least $50,000. And this is in addition to health care and retirement benefits as well. So these players are getting a hefty penny. Like I said before in the show, when I was playing Call of Duty at a professional level, we got paid nowhere near this amount. Nothing was guaranteed. Everything was based on tournament winnings back in the day. Now these players get $50,000 no matter how they do. They can be terrible. They can be absolutely, they can be team envy of the LCS a few seasons ago, and they can still make $50,000 here, as well as all of these other benefits like retirement and healthcare. On top of that, teams must also award the players 50% of all prize winnings, and teams are not required to provide housing. This is a big key, in my opinion. So they have to pay them all these pay all this money. They have to pay healthcare. They have to pay retirement. They do not have to guarantee housing, but they have to show that they're at least going to help the players find affordable housing in the area. So what are your thoughts looking at all of this, as well as the comparisons to Overwatch League?
I like it. The mid-series substitutions, I like. Capping your roster at 10, I like also. Minimum of 7, I like that too. 50% of all prize winnings have to go to the players. I think that is a great rule to have. That is something that we see time and time again with gamers on the professional level and their organizations. What do they get? What do they not get? What's written in their contract? I like how this is put up front saying 50%, regardless of whatever it is, has to go to the players. I do like that. And I think that's a fair split, players versus organization. The housing one is a little weird. Now, we've touched on it before, Joey, where we've started to see some organizations move away from the traditional gaming house, if you will. But a lot of organizations still stand by the gaming house. You know, even organizations like Cloud9 with their LCS team, I'm pretty sure Sneaky does not live in the gaming house anymore. He still trains there. He goes back to the gaming house, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't live there. And I think Double Lift also doesn't live in the TSM gaming house. I believe he has a place of his own also.
Reckless doesn't either.
Yeah, and Reckless. So a lot of organizations are kind of dabbling with this idea right now of, hey, why not have that separation of personal space and workspace? have that ability to go to work. Like that, it's easier to be in a mental mindset saying, hey, I need to leave my house at 8 a.m. to arrive at the training center by 8:45 a.m. And that is my cue to myself that it's time to put, you know, my gamer jersey on, my controller on, or whatever we want to use to represent the transition from, you know, personal life to professional life. You know, in the normal business world, you put a suit on, you put a dress on, you put a pantsuit on, you put some kind of business attire on, and that's really your moment where you're like, hey, now I'm in business mode. There's a lot to be said for that. And also, I feel like that would be a way to hold players accountable, to help them grow up, and they're not going to be in a situation where they're literally catered to in a gaming house. So I like the idea. I really like the idea that the organization is going to help them find housing, because we also have to remember, a lot of these gamers, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, I don't know about you, Joey, but when I was 19, I don't think I could figure out how to find affordable housing even if I wanted to. So I'm glad to see these organizations and this league really forcing that they're going to have to help them out, because let's be honest here. We all need help at that stage in life to try to figure out our way, because you're not taught that in school. You're not taught that in high school. You're not taught that in private school. You're not taught that anywhere. You're not taught how to adult. It's thrown at you like a towel in your face, and you're just like, wait, I have to do what? I have to find housing and play video games and housing and video games. Joey, I wish I had that problem. But yeah, I feel like it's a good step in the right direction. I feel like this is just pushing that idea even farther, to having those players live on their own and being responsible for themselves, and then showing up to the team house or center or training center in some cases, for their work. Having that barrier is important.
Right. I couldn't agree more. And it doesn't say anything about training facilities, but I would assume, at least I think it's safe to assume, that the league and the organizations in it would at least have to provide a training facility of some sorts, whether it be a gaming house, whether it be some kind of facility like Team Liquid has with Alienware and now Misfits. I feel like some kind of training facility should be required, and it might be. I didn't read through the whole thing. With that being said, I would not be surprised if a lot of players live in that house as well, and then maybe the organization charges rent at some prorated amount. I think that's what we'll see a lot of them do, actually, is they'll live in a gaming house and then pay some kind of half-price rent or whatever to the organization. Or maybe they get a hotel right across from the training center or something like that. But I do see the organizations really helping out in this area. You want your players to be comfortable. You want them to feel good. You want them to be close by your training facility in the city where you're going to be playing these games at. So overall, I don't see this really being a big issue at this level. If an organization is paying $25 to $40 million to get into this league, they're not really going to screw around with housing. It's not these little organizations that are screwing players over here and there. Esports has its issues. There are definitely smaller organizations out there that have these issues. I'm freezing, aren't I?
You did, yeah. But you're back, and we just didn't say anything, so you're good.
Hey, good time. So I saw you laughing. That's pretty much saying something. Yeah, we're still having this issue where I can see John move, but he can't see me at times. It's kind of creepy, actually. But overall, I think it's – I don't know what you guys heard, but I do think it's going to be a good move overall. I think the organizations, if they're paying this much to buy into the league, they are going to do a good job with it. They're going to end up wanting these players to be at the best of their ability. If you're paying $25 to $40 million to get into this league, you really want these players to perform. You want to show the best for that team. It's not a rinky-dink organization that is just paying a little bit of money to participate in this tournament and then will possibly screw over players because it's so small and it can't afford its financial needs. These are obviously organizations that can afford this. So we could see some trouble here and there. But overall, if you're willing to shell out that much money, I think you do respect your players and you will at least help them find housing here. According to the league's rules.
Rinky dink. I have not heard that phrase in forever.
Yeah,
that,
you
that
know.
Is a classic.
My chair is also falling down. good times over here. You know what? I'll blame the milk sugar. On top of that, we had Dota 2's The International 9 wrap up this past week. Tons of viewership, tons of money on the line, and we do have our champions, John. That is OG. They're our first two-time back-to-back TI champions. OG has now won the single largest esports prize pool of all time at $15.5 million, $3.1 million per player, making it dun-dun-dun-dun, a $27 million won in Dota 2 in the last 2 years.
Yeah. Can I get like 1% of that? I'd be happy. That's a lot of money. $27 million in 2 years. Joey, that 15.5 is going to change your life. 27 overall is going to be, that's, I love it. I absolutely love it. If you have not made a habit, to all you guys out there, all the listeners, if you have not made a habit of going on social media when these major events happen, when esports are shown on cable television or on network television, go on social media when that happens, mainly Twitter, and just watch the reactions from the older generations of them trying to understand how video games can pull in this kind of viewership, this kind of demand, and this kind of prize pool. These kids, in comparison to traditional athletes, these kids have made more money in 2 years in one tournament than Tiger Woods does in one Masters, than a lot of pro players make in 1 year. You know, we're not talking about the max contracts. We're not talking about your number one, you know, quarterback in the NFL. I'm talking about when you take a look at the league average for a position in any traditional sport, these kids are blowing that out of the water. That should tell you something. And if you want to have some fun, take a look at the social media. Slasher, it does an amazing job at retweeting, screen capping, and retweeting it out of all the boomers and the older generations out there trying to figure this out as to why it's on TV. I do not know where I would be right now without Slasher. He is absolutely wonderful for esports, and his ability to just turn an entire generation that doesn't understand gaming into one of the biggest ongoing memes, I think is absolutely fantastic. I cannot wait for the Overwatch finals, because that's going to be on ABC and it's going to be glorious, and the boomers are going to explode. It's going to be absolutely fantastic.
Right. And Rod has done a good job on TV as well. Rod being Slasher, when he goes on stuff like, I think he's been on Fox News, I think he might have been on CNN, if I remember correctly. He might have been on ABC too, but he's on multiple news channels, multiple news outlets where he's explained esports. He's talked about esports. He's talked about the growing phenomenon of Fortnite as well, in particular. He's just done a really good job. He's like kind of like Ninja in that sense. Like, Ninja's done a really good job on public TV as well. And yes, the older generation still doesn't get it. I feel like some people in our generation still don't get it either, John. But when it comes down to it, esports is growing, viewership numbers are growing, prize pools, look at Dota, they are obviously growing. These players just took home $27 million in 2 years just in that tournament alone. There's a lot of money in esports, and there's a lot of viewership, and there's a lot of global appeal as well, especially in Asia, and it's just going to keep growing and growing and growing. And eventually, the older generation, even if they want to ignore it, it's still going to be there, and it's still going to be bigger than it is now.
I cannot wait for Tom Brady or some NASCAR driver. NASCAR drivers. NASCAR is still not a sport. I'm going to clarify that again. LeBron James, people overlook. I am waiting for I want Messi. I want Ronaldo. I want some major international name break out in a Fortnite dance in a celebration. I want to see Messi's new cleats. I believe he's Nike sponsored, so that's not going to work. I want to see a soccer player, a big name soccer player sponsored by Adidas, rocking the new Ninja cleat for soccer. That's what I want to see. I want to see this blow up so much that the older generations can't ignore it, that it's literally in their face no matter where they go. And it's going to be so great to watch. I mean, Joey, our generation, when we get to that age, when we're elderly, which it'll never happen, when we get to that age, we're going to be a gaming generation. I mean, I can imagine now our grandkids, our great grandkids, are going to come visit us in a gaming nursing home where we're still going to be playing Overwatch, where we're still going to be trash talking, you know, every toxic, you know, BM you can do in game, you're still doing it at the ripe age of 87 years old. That is the world I want to live in.
Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen. We will still broadcast Level Up from the nursing home as well.
And just real quick, Squirrel, you are absolutely correct and still stuck in bronze. Or plastic division when if that's still around. But yeah, still hard stuck in bronze 87 years later down the road.
Aye. Not stuck in bronze, the Overwatch League, because they are moving on into playoffs to wrap up Season 2. John, we have exciting playoffs ahead. It looks like a pretty good bracket. What are we looking like overall?
Oh, don't ask me that. I'm still trying to pull the bracket. That's the one tab I forgot to open going into this.
A lay rep.
Let me see here. Do you actually have a link to the bracket?
There isn't really a bracket, technically. It's a schedule.
Okay, so let's see. Okay, cool. So look, so week one of the playoffs, Friday, August 30th. Hey, that's this Friday. This Friday, we have the Hunters going up against the Charge. It is the Battle of China right here coming out of the gate. And then on August 31st, a Saturday, we have Shanghai versus the Fusion. And then we do know London will play at 3 p.m. as well, and Seoul will play at 6. They are awaiting, I believe, the decision from the Friday playing game, correct?
The winner of the Friday playing game and the winner of that, well, I guess it's still Friday, the 12 a.m. Saturday game.
Okay, cool. So the winner of the Hunters and Charge and then the winner of Dragons and Fusion will go on to play London and Seoul.
Predictions. You going Chengdu or Guangzhou?
This is tough. I'm going to go with the Charge.
Yep, I'm Charge ahead with them as well.
Mainly because they have a bromance with the Washington Justice. And for the best team in Stage 4, the fact that we don't even have a Stage 4 playoffs, I am still salty. Thank you very much. I'm going to live vicariously through the Charge. I'll take them for the win. And the Fusion and the Dragons, that is going to be a spicy matchup. Really impressed with how Shanghai's really turned everything around. They are so incredibly strong. I'm going to take the Dragons on this one. And it's not just because I don't like Philadelphia, believe it or not, Joey, but I do think the Dragons are going to be the stronger team here.
Yeah, I'm going to charge ahead with the same pick with the Guangzhou Charge. They were one of those teams that I really thought was a dark horse, them and the Washington Justice heading into Stage 4. Both of them proved me right. I think the Guangzhou Charge stay as a dark horse here. They do win this first matchup and possibly take the next as well if they get Seoul. I'm going to take Shanghai in the next matchup, just like you did as well. The Dragons are roaring. They've had a little bit of issues. It looked like their fire stopped spitting out there for a bit toward the end of Stage 4, but I do think they pick it back up. I think they take down the Fusion, and they will move forward. I don't exactly know the breakdown as far as seeding goes, but I think if the Charge gets Seoul, I think the Charge do advance another round. And I think that's really it for this week, because then there's more matchups next week, but we can probably wait to cover those for now. To give you guys an idea of the teams that have already moved forward into Week 2, though, that's going to be Vancouver with the bye. The Los Angeles Gladiators will be taking on the Spark. New York Excelsior is another team with a bye, and then the Atlanta Reign up against the San Francisco Shock. Those are all six of the teams that qualified in the regular season. This first week, though, is going to be the play-in for that final seeds, for those final seeds. Okay, good stuff, John. Let's go to League of Legends, because we had some great playoff stuff going on. The LEC kicked off their round one. How did that go?
LEC playoffs finally here. North America wraps up and Europe's like, hey, let's start now. So the LEC round one, Joey, we had some spicy matchups. We had Rogue taking on Splice. Joey, this was a clean sweep. This was a 3-0. This was Rogue taking it 3-0 over Splice. And no, their bans did not spell out TSM XD this time around. But they did spell out Splice XD as they take the 3-0 win. Schalke picking up the 3-1 win over Team Vitality as well. Both of those teams will meet in the quarterfinals now, Joey.
Yeah, so I think I had, well, I think we both had Splice winning 3-1. And then I think I had Schalke winning 3-1, and you might have had Vitality in a five-game series. Don't remember, chat, you can look into that if you want to, but I don't think anyone really cares that much. Rogue and Schalke now meet up. I'm excited for this matchup. Rogue, I think, surprised a lot of people. A lot of people thought Splice was the number three team in this region right now. Rogue whipping them out with a 3-0. I'm kind of stunned, to be honest. I think Rogue has a lot of young talent, but I didn't think it was ready to prove itself in playoffs yet. So now I really don't know who to take out of this. I think Rogue does stand a good shot.
Well, Joey, I will go to the matchup I know you're invested in. So now just to recap, the LEC is a little funky. They like to be different, if you will, in Europe. So we have the quarterfinals between Rogue and Schalke. Then we have what I'm going to call the super quarterfinals between G2 and Fnatic, because the winner of this super quarterfinal, if you will, has a do not pass go, collect $200 and go straight to the finals. Loser then goes to the semifinals that will face the winner of Rogue and Schalke. So great for G2 and Fnatic here, as one of them will punch a ticket directly to the finals. The other one gets a second chance at life going to the semifinals. So, Joey, the super quarterfinals, if you will, G2 Esports versus Fnatic. Who are you going to take?
Man, this one's tough. So both these teams are 2-2 against each other this year. They've had really great matchups overall. Both teams, really even in the wins, all of the wins, it could have gone either way with a different team fight here and there. I think G2 does win out. I want to say 5-game series because Fnatic is just so good in best of fives, but I am going to go 3-1 G2 for the first leg.
I'm going to go 3-2 G2 in the first leg. And Joey, I'm pretty confident in saying this. I have a feeling we're both picking these two teams to be the LEC finals. Regardless of who does win this match and who loses this match, both of these teams can easily beat Rogue and Schalke. I don't see that being a bump along the way. I feel like both of these teams are going to meet back up in the finals. But I will take G2 in a 5-game series, 3-2 over Fnatic. Fnatic is going to take down Rogue or Schalke. I don't think they're going to have an issue with that, and they'll find their way back to the finals as well.
Okay, so I don't want to spend a ton more time on this, but I'm curious what you would do in this situation. So Fnatic comes into this. They're around the second seed for Worlds right now. I don't know if they've 100% locked it in yet, but you come into this first matchup with all guns blazing to try to make it to that finals matchup, but then show all your cards so G2 could steamroll you? Or do you hold some of your cards back, and if you don't make it, then you have some of those cards still to show in the finals?
So here's the issue. It's that any given Sunday mentality. Mm-hmm. If you don't punch your ticket now, is there a possibility that either Rogue or Schalke can beat you? Yes, that is a real possibility. Is it likely? I would say no, but it is a possibility. I mean, we all hear about those underdog stories. While you don't want to show everything, you need to show enough to get that advantage to punch your ticket. Because you have that advantage then. Because then you get to sit back and watch the other team now have to prepare for either Rogue or Schalke. And then after they're done with that, then they're now going to have to prepare for you again and try to figure out what went wrong the first time and how do we build upon that. I don't think you expose everything you have in your back pocket, but I feel like the opportunity to punch your ticket to the final, get a bye week, get some time off, and then better prepare for the final is so huge that I don't think you want to hold too much back where you risk that opportunity to punch that ticket and have to face possibly a Rogue or a Schalke, where, again, any given day, they could possibly beat you. All it does is take one off day, one bad game, them being on their game, on their A game, and maybe you're on your B+, it's not going to be enough. They are pro players. You can't count them out. They did make the playoffs in a very tough LEC division. So I would say you don't show everything, but you have to show enough to take advantage of the opportunity to punch your ticket.
Yeah, I'm the same way. If it comes down to game 5 in the series, Fnatic and G2 are 2-2, I think you pull out all the stops. I think you try to make it. Worst comes to worst, you end in second place. You've been in second place to G2 quite a few splits now. Might as well be there again and get that qualification to Worlds. So I'm right there with you, John. I think you pull it all out. I think you do what you can. Hold what you need to back. But if it comes down to that final game where you really need to jump through, I think you pull it all out and give it your best go. Okay, so Rogue and Schalke, who are you taking?
Oh, Rogue was really impressive against Splice. Schalke pretty strong against Vitality. I will go ahead. You know what? I'm going to take Rogue in a 5-game series, 3-2.
Yep, that's what I'm leaning for as well. I think Schalke will be able to figure out some of the stuff that Rogue showed in that first series against Splice. They'll be able to adapt for that, and they'll at least get 2 games off of them. But Rogue does look very strong, so 3-2. G2 Fnatic, we already predicted, so that brings us to our magical pogo stick that hasn't been taken out in a while. Over to NA. Go ahead, give us a sound effect.
I completely forgot about that.
It's been a minute. Over in NA, we had our finals and third place match. In the third place match, Clutch Gaming was denied once again by the final game in a five-game series. Silver Scrapes played, Clutch Gaming heard it, and they fell right off after that. CLG with the 3-2 victory in that series, which brings us to the finals. You have that beautiful flag in the background, a flag that represents second place here in NALCS, or the LCS now.
I hate you so much.
Yes. Cloud9, or Cloud2 in this case, for second. They ended up with two games in this series, losing to Team Liquid in a five-game series, 3-2. I do have to say it was a great series overall. There were some stomps here and there, but overall I felt like it was pretty competitive. Cloud9 did a very good job of trying to take advantage of the early game. It didn't always work out in their favor, but I felt like both teams were fighting very well, and I feel like they represented why they're both top two in NA right now.
I hope G2 absolutely smacks the crap out of Fnatic just because of that little spiel you did on Cloud9. No, it was a very good, very entertaining five-game series. Both teams showed their strengths. Both teams have obvious weaknesses. Look, on paper, Team Liquid should have won this. Absolutely. On paper, with the talent they have, there's no reason Team Liquid should not have won this. The fact it went five games, I think, is a testament to Cloud9 as an organization, as a player base. They are very gritty, and they're not afraid to mix things up. They're not afraid to commit and go for the low percentage play and come out with a W. And it pays off for them. They are very good at what they do. Cloud9 plays a very unique style. Team Liquid is a team that was built to win championships. They're a team that is built to compete on the international stage. Now, let's take a look at history. Team Liquid really doesn't have a history in international competition because they've only been good for the past like year and a half when they bought all the players. Not dogging anyone. It's just a fact. There's a reason why Team Liquid had the fourth place meme. Their experience in Worlds last year was lackluster. It wasn't very impressive. They had a roster that should have done more, that should have performed better. They went out, they got Jensen, they retooled. They're a very strong team. I think jungle is still a weakness for Team Liquid, but this is a team that was supposed to dominate the NLC. Oh, I did it again. The LCS.
I did too.
Supposed to dominate the LCS, and they didn't do it as well this split. There was a lot of challenges out there. Cloud9 being one of the only Western teams, along with Fnatic, to really make noise in international competitions. Both teams made it to the Final Four last year at Worlds. Team Liquid struggled to get out of group. So there's a lot to unpack here. Team Liquid, while yes, they should have won, they did win 3-2. Good for them. Their focus is now, how do we improve as an organization on the international stage? Cloud9, I'm pretty sure they're about ready to head over to start boot camp in Korea almost any day now once Sneaky packs his cosplay up. But, you know, they have it right. Like, Cloud9 understands what to do. For Team Liquid, for a lot of these players, for this organization, it is still new to them. So they need to figure this out quick, because on paper, this team should make it out of groups. Team Liquid is going to be the number one seed for North America. Cloud9 is going to be the number two seed, and whoever wins the gauntlet is going to be that third seed that's going to have to go through the play-in stages and all that other horrificness. There's a lot of pressure on Team Liquid. They should have won this. They did it in five games. A lot of people expected them to probably do it 3-1. As a Cloud9 fan, I'm happy it went five games. Cloud9 put up a decent fight. To me, it wasn't surprising Team Liquid won, but now you have to turn the page. You can't dwell on that. If you're a Team Liquid fan, look, you have to move on. Worlds is coming, and you need to prove that this roster that arguably has one of the best ADCs in the world, a top 10 ADC player, a top 10 mid laner, Impact, a former world champion himself, can actually go out there. And Core JJ. Let's not forget about Core JJ as support. You have so much talent on this roster, there is no excuse anymore, Team Liquid. You have to go out and do it. And yes, any fans, we come together when it comes to Worlds. I want to see Team Liquid do well. I want to see Cloud9 do well. I want to see whoever runs the gauntlet do well. But I don't have faith in this organization based upon their international play. And I'm sorry. I look at records, and that's what I do. I want them to do well. They should do well, and they need to do well, not just for Team Liquid, but for the LCS also.
And that kicks us off with the Gauntlet. Rapid fire here. Clutch Gaming and FlyQuest are going to start off our Gauntlet in the quarterfinals. Do you see Clutch losing in yet another five-game series, or do they move on here? Actually,
I
this
think
is,
Clutch moves
is this
on.
One-game series for NA? Do you remember?
I still think it's a best of five.
Yeah, I don't remember what it is for their regionals.
Yeah, I still think it's best of five.
Best of five. Okay, so you're going to go Clutch here.
I'm going to go Clutch.
Yeah, I think third time's a charm for Clutch as well. I do think they come out on top of this. Whether it be one game or five games, I do think Clutch has the edge over FlyQuest. So with that, they will clutch their way into the semifinals, and we'll have to wait and see how all this goes for the regionals in NA. But I am stoked, John. I think this is another great episode. Gamescom stuff, we're still getting news from Gamescom that didn't leak out of the press yet, as they're still getting their articles out. A ton of exciting stuff happening in esports with playoffs this weekend for the LCS and Overwatch League. There is so much to look forward to.
Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us that review on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, there are other ways you can reach out to us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us and this show?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. If you want to hit us up for some Horde when Gears 5 drops next week, that's where you'll do it at. On top of that, you can find us streaming regularly on twitch.tv/OTN_live. Level Up goes live usually Monday nights at 7 p.m. This night's a Wednesday. Sometimes we move it here and there, but we have streams throughout the week. Check us out on Twitch.
Life happens, and sometimes we have to move the show. It's always fun. But Nation, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor and slap that subscribe button to know when the next episode of Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And I'm waiting for Joey to finish taking his drink. As always,
level up.
Level up.